Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, April 5th, 2018. And with me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. And John Martellaro, I'm glad you are here too. How are you?
I'm good. I'm also glad to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. And listeners, I'm so glad you are here. And I think we have a lot to talk about, so we need to just hop right in. And we're going to start with Facebook. And John, you have some ideas about how Facebook has been seducing us. And I'm assuming by seduction, you don't mean Jessica Rabbit, you mean Joe Tynan. And there's a whole segment of the audience that's running to IMDb right now to figure out what that reference means.
Ever since this Cambridge Analytica affair started, I've been pondering the Facebook situation. We've been kind of drifting along over the years as Facebook has risen to about 2.2 billion users. And we all kind of sat on the idea that, yeah, we know that the data is being sold. But the Cambridge Analytica affair got me thinking more and more about the psychology of Facebook and what's really going on with people's evaluation of the effectiveness of Facebook and its utility and why they use it. And a couple of things came to light in my research. For a long time, it's been known that information overload leads to inaction. So that's the first prong of the attack. You can keep people busy. If you can keep them watching guys doing dumb things with their pickup trucks on videos, they won't be thinking about anything else.
And don't underestimate the value of kitten videos.
Yeah, too. And then there is the second prong, and that is that I read recently that most users figures, because everything on the internet is free, Facebook is a public service, and they don't really understand the business model behind Facebook selling their information to the tune of billions of dollars a year in income. Mm-hmm. And the third element is kind of a minor element, and that is that people don't really believe in such a thing as confirmation bias, that they are independent thinkers and can't be manipulated, persuaded, seduced, kept preoccupied, kept off balance. And so those are the things I've been thinking about in terms of Facebook, and there's some research on all of these elements that support what they're doing. And of course, the research says that these are effective ways of manipulating people, and then Facebook subscribership zooms. So they must be doing something really, really right. Mm-hmm. But the question is, how do people become more balanced, and how do people get a better balance on their perspective and their evaluation of Facebook? We were talking in the morning meeting about how people may decide that because they're so overloaded and don't have time to analyze, and because they're so preoccupied that they figure they don't have any control, they can't make any intelligent decisions, and that the benefits of Facebook outweigh the disadvantages. And so they just roll with it.
So you mean like, Facebook's there. It's easy for me to see news and opinions without having to go anywhere else. So I'll just take
low barriers.
Okay.
Right. Right. Combined with the idea that they are flattering themselves, that they are unlikely to be persuaded against their wishes. So there's a lot of research in this area, and it all seems to kind of come together in how Facebook has grown and how Facebook has created an alluring environment for users. So that's my current thoughts. And I think I'm going to write an article that kind of collects the research and kind of put a story together.
I'm looking forward to reading it. And I have a question for you. Do you think that the natural tendency that people have to overestimate their ability to pick out news or other actions that are designed to manipulate them in some way is being overestimated. Meaning, like, I may be overly confident that I'll know when Facebook is trying to manipulate me, and in fact, that's not the case, and so it becomes easier for Facebook to manipulate me.
Yeah, and I agree. That's why I brought up the idea of confirmation bias. You segregate yourself into camps. And I was thinking about older times, and I'm not trying to be too throwback here, but there was a time when very experienced news people collected what they thought was important in their editorial judgment for people to know and then presented that. Nowadays, we have a different structure. We have camps, clans almost. Mm-hmm. And the clan has the philosophy, and the clan speaks only to itself. And outsiders to the clan are the enemy, if not the offender.
That's kind of how the whole Fox CNN thing looks to me right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you have this idea that if you're within the clan, then the magnification of concepts appears to support your beliefs, and so you don't become too introspective about how you arrived at that point.
Andrew, you're about to say something.
Oh, I was just going to point out that I've been seeing a lot of that in politics, where there's not a lot of talking between all these different sides and filter bubbles. It's just tribalism now.
That's a really good point. And that's something that to me seems like part of the seduction, the allure of Facebook. And it's that you can choose to follow people and pages and sites that, or companies that pander to the type of information you're looking for. So you can create, whether you intend to or not, that confirmation bias. And I think that with Facebook's algorithms and the way they create these personality profiles on us, that gets accentuated, because if Facebook knows that you want to see news about the new baby kitten party that's sure to beat the Democrats and Republicans in the next presidential election, then those are the types of pieces that they're going to filter to the top of your feed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, John, do you have any suggestions on what people can do to try and avoid falling into that seductive trap?
Well, one thing is to avoid seductive titles that you know are designed to capture your attention because of the nature of the title. You need to have some sort of radar detector that tips you off when a title is specifically designed to appeal to you. The other thing you can do is read a wide range of sources in a wide range of ways, and pay attention to respected and accomplished journalists rather than to titles and videos, so that you read Slate and you read Quartz and you read Wall Street Journal and you read Washington Post and you read other respected publications with different views, The Atlantic. Cultivate a broad spectrum of sources in different ways, some in a news app, some through bookmarks in your browser, some through, maybe Facebook, some through the kinds of people that you decide to follow on Twitter, and try to be open-minded about that too as well. So sample in a wide-ranging way, I would recommend.
Okay, I like that. So if I condense that down and paraphrase it back to you, go out of your way to make sure you're not siloing yourself into a single perspective with the online content that you're viewing. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that ties in nicely with the other thing that I want to talk about today, And Andrew, this is where you really come in. So you put together a really great piece on how we can sandbox Facebook, in a manner of speaking, to help limit the amount of tracking it can do. And explain this to me.
I looked at three different tools. Probably the most popular one, because it's been in the news recently, is this tool that Mozilla Firefox put out, and it's called the Facebook Container. And it's a browser extension, and it basically it creates a sandbox out of each tab. And it's not just for Facebook. There's another extension that lets you do the same thing with other websites. But basically, once you put Facebook into this extension, it sandboxes it and it closes it off. And this includes the cookies, so, you know, Facebook can't track whatever you do on other websites.
Okay, so to make sure I've got this right, once you're using this Firefox plugin, what it does is it isolates Facebook so that the rest of the web browsing activity you're doing is hidden from Facebook. So it's not like Facebook can set their own cookies to follow you from site to site and figure out what other content you're looking at, right?
Yep, that's pretty much how it works, I think.
Okay.
Does Safari achieve that through blocking cross-site tracking?
Yeah, it basically does the same thing, because Safari already kind of, and I think Chrome does this too now, where each website that you load into a tab is its own little container. And I think they focus more on it trying to limit malware so it doesn't spread. Mm-hmm. But I think it also works with cookies and other things too.
So in browsers like Safari and Chrome, if you were to open up a new browser window, independent of everything else you have going on, and put it into for Chrome, it's called incognito mode, and in Safari, it's private browsing, and then work with Facebook in that single window, then that would be pretty similar to what Firefox is doing with their plugin, do you think?
As far as I know, yes. I mean, that's kind of a warning that I've been seeing some companies say, you know, incognito mode doesn't mean you're completely anonymous, for example. It's not really about privacy in that sense. I think it just works on, once you close that window, it deletes that browser session and it deletes all the cookies.
Okay, so in that sense, Firefox's plugin may be more robust.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
As I understand it, there's two concepts here. There's somebody being able to come onto your machine and look at your history and see where you've been in these private browsing modes when you close the window, clear all that out. But it doesn't prevent the cross-site tracking while you're active through the cookies, as you just described. Is that right?
Okay. And so that's where Facebook's plugin would come in.
Yes.
Firefox's plugin would come in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's also a web browser that I'm really liking called Ghost Browser. And what Ghost Browser does is it lets you create completely sandboxed instances of itself in the app, in the browser app. And so you can have like collections of tabs that would be as if they were their own separate web browser. And the part of the idea was, when the browser was designed, they were thinking, hey, you know, developers, they can be logged into the same site as multiple users simultaneously for testing, you know, things like that. But one of the other benefits is, if you create a new tab that's its wow, that is its own group, and open Facebook in that, it is completely isolated from the rest of your browsing activity, which I believe is what Firefox is doing with their plugin.
Yeah, so when I was doing some research on this, it does basically a similar thing to what that Firefox extension does, but I think it's even more robust than that even. Because okay. it's not just an extension, the entire browser is built around this.
You know, as you're saying this, and maybe I'm misinterpreting where Firefox is going with this, or maybe I'm putting words in their mouth, so to speak. It kind of feels to me like they're treating Facebook as if it were a virus.
Yeah, I got that impression too.
Yeah, so John, that's more validation for your general dislike of Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was using Firefox and touting it for a long time, used it for many years, because it's built by a company that isn't one of the tech giants and doesn't have its own agenda, although I must admit, Safari does a pretty good job of protecting you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there came a time, I think it was 2016, when for technical reasons, Firefox stopped supporting Web of Trust. So I went back to Safari.
Yeah.
Do you have any updates on that?
Well, from what I understand, and listeners, if I've got this wrong, call me out and help me out here. I believe Firefox chose to abandon Web of Trust because that was a system, it was an honor system. And if any website or service chose to not honor it, then it wasn't effective. And they found that the majority of sites really weren't honoring that. So they decided to abandon it because it wasn't doing any good. And listeners, if I've got that wrong, I know you're going to let me know. So that's why I'm glad that Apple, with their more recent versions of Safari, have proactively worked to limit the tracking and other data collecting things that websites could do.
Yeah.
And there was a good tip from Alyssa this morning about an update to Safari that helps you remember whether you're in HTTPS or not.
I will make sure there's a link to that in the show notes so that it's easy for everyone to find. And yes, that was a great tip. And I love how much easier it is to tell when you're on certain sites if your data is being encrypted or not. So kudos to Apple for doing that. Yeah. All right. We are close to out of time. Do either of you have any other suggestions you want to toss out to help people rein in Facebook?
I actually mentioned this in my article, but then I kind of removed it and changed the language around. Probably the best sandbox that you could create is a virtual machine. But I just felt that that was out of the scope of this article, and that would require a whole guide by itself.
You know,
but if you're really serious about it, then that's what you should do.
Well, I liked how you said it in your introduction that if you're at the point where you feel like you need to use a virtual machine to use a service like that, maybe you should just not use the service.
Yeah, and actually there's a reader that called me out on that because in his opinion, or her, that was the only way he does use Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt that if you're going to the trouble of setting up a virtual machine just for one website, I just felt that maybe that was a little overkill. But I mean, that's just my view.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you have to use Facebook, like for your job, and you really, really, really don't want Facebook following what you're doing, and, you know, maybe a virtual machine is the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are out of time, so we have to wrap up. Andrew, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, it was good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that was a lot of great info. John, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, thanks for having me too.
It's great to have both of you here. Listeners, I am so glad that you joined us today. Thank you for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.